Welcome back, everyone, to the XCast. The truth is in here. My name is Clara Cook, and I'm your host today. And joining me is Andrew Brooker. Hello, Andrew. How are you?
I am good, thank you, Clara. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I don't think we've ever recorded together.
We haven't. Considering we've both been around a bit. Yeah, it's a first time, which is good.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's actually good to meet different people who also like the X-Files, because I feel like I'm recording with the same people, which is nice. But it's also good to meet other people who are members of the X-Cast group.
I'm pretty sure I've used up all of my X-Cast stories, though. So I'll be pretty boring from here on in.
So today we're going to be talking about the episode Nisi. I think I'm pronouncing that right. That's episode 9 of season 3. It's directed by David Nutter, written by Chris Carter, with the help of Howard Gordon and Frank Spotnitz. It first aired on television on the 24th of November 1995. In the episode, Mulder and Scully investigate a supposed alien autopsy, and the investigation uncovers Japanese involvement, which leads Mulder to secretly smuggling himself onto a train. So Nisi is a two-parter. The second part is called 731, which we will discuss at a later episode. The IMDb rating for this episode is 8.7 out of 10. Andrew, do you think that's fair?
No, I don't. I think it should be higher.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Tell us why.
This is one of those ones that I've spoken about before. Me and Tony have talked about these like at length as well. But back in the day when you used to get special episodes come out on video, this was one of my favourite ones. Or this double bill was one of my favourite VHSs to sit and watch. It came out on a VHS called 82571, which I believe is the number for the train that Mulder ends up on at the end of the episode.
So I wondered, actually, if there was a significance to that number. Is it like an Easter egg?
I have no idea. the honest answer is, I have absolutely no idea. I don't think it's a nostalgia thing, because I watched these episodes a couple of days ago, and I absolutely adore them. I think they're really fun. They're daft, because they're the X-Files, but, you know, they're really fun. They're good episodes. They're good mythology episodes, good character episodes. I would easily give this episode a 9 out of 10 on a bad day.
Yeah, I think I would give this first one a 9 out of 10. I'm not sure so much about the second part. I think I kind of lost my way a little bit there, but we'll get onto that. So let's look at the episode a bit more in detail. The teaser starts out in Knoxville, Tennessee, with a bunch of schoolchildren who are riding their bikes past a train, like a sort of level crossing, and there's a guy on the train who's passing by who waves at them. And I thought that was kind of a nice detail, because it's sort of making something that seems quite innocent.
Yeah.
Later on, obviously in the teaser, it becomes quite dark, you know, in the sense that it's actually kind of a normal sight is for it to see a train go by, but little do you know, the train is harbouring a secret. Later on, at the depot, the carriage is disengaged from the train and left on the tracks. And later that night, we see the carriage, which is numbered 82594, which I really thought must mean something, because I know that they love to play around with numbers in the X-Files, but I couldn't find a reference anywhere to that number. So maybe it's just a random number they chose. Someone's birthday, maybe. So then a bunch of Japanese men get out of cars and enter the train carriage, which is outfitted inside like a lab or an operating theatre. And the Japanese scientists are performing an autopsy on what appears to be an alien. Just then, armed men burst in and gun down all the Japanese men and zip up the alien in a body bag. So this is quite a dramatic opening to the episode. So right away, we're seeing an alien body. Right away, we kind of have an indication of what we're in for. What did you think of the teaser?
I think it's a great teaser, actually. It gives you, in that first, like, what is it, 2.5 minutes, it shows you that it's a mythology episode. It's going to be, you know, it looks like there's going to be some drama, some mysteries, but, you know, it's going to be a fast-paced, probably isn't the best way to describe it, but it's you know there's going to be lots going on. And maybe this is just, I know this now because I've seen the episode a million times, but you watch the teaser and you go, this is an episode I'm looking forward to getting into. It's one of those, because obviously with the episodes alternating between mythology and Monster of the Week and when the season's aired, it's literally a teaser. You'd go, right, this is one I'm going to sit down and watch. If you're only into the mythology episodes, and I do know quite a few people who are just into the mythology, you go, all right, this one's for me. I don't need to turn over and watch, I don't know, Top Gear or whatever else was on when X-Files was on back in the day. Nice, a great opening. It's one of the stronger ones, I think, as well. I really like this one.
Also, Alien Abduction kind of goes hand in hand with Alien Autopsy, doesn't it? So
yes.
It's kind of like the bread and butter of the X-Files is an Alien Autopsy.
I'm not sure it works. It worked over here because it aired over here about a year after it aired in the States. But obviously, when it aired in the States, it was hot on the tail of a lot of fake Alien Autopsy videos appearing. Like, it was actually a thing that these fake Alien Autopsy videos were doing the rounds. So to base an episode around that, you know, I think we probably would have got a little bit of that, but a year later, maybe not so much. But I suppose in the States, that would have been a big, big hook.
I read originally that they actually wanted to do this episode a lot earlier, and they wanted to do just one single episode where there's like an alien autopsy on a train, but that working with trains was proving to be logistically too difficult.
Okay.
So that's why they spread it out into two episodes, and they did it like later in the running order of the series, which I thought was interesting because nowhere could I find any information about why working with trains is difficult. I assume it must take a lot of, I guess, organization with train companies and train lines and tracks and stuff, but apparently it was like a logistical nightmare working with the trains, and the producers were sort of saying that this is going to be impossible to film.
Wow.
So that's one reason why they spread it out over two episodes to give themselves more time.
I did not know that was a thing.
No, neither did I. Considering how many films and TV shows involve trains.
I briefly considered going, well, maybe it's a technology thing, because, you know, cameras and things are huge, or were huge back in the 90s, but I've seen films made in the 40s and 50s that were set on trains. I don't know, it can't be that. I have no idea.
I mean, maybe it's a budget thing. Maybe they've got to hire a train, or they've got to pay train companies to use their tracks or something.
Yeah, possibly. Or just to keep tracks, I don't know, clear so they can film on them. Health and safety, possibly.
And this did make me laugh, just because for our US listeners, we've had quite a lot of trouble in the UK with trains and train times and trains being delayed. And so throughout this episode, I was kind of thinking that I wonder if you could film this in the UK. I'm not sure you could, what with a lot of our train problems here.
You've got to wait for the next disaster, haven't you? There's going to be one around the corner. So the next time something happens that shuts down trains for a week, that's when you film your episode.
Yeah, that's true. And I was just thinking Mulder probably wouldn't miss any of the trains that he misses in this episode because
no.
They would all be delayed anyway.
Well, he'd be standing on the platform with the thousands of other people who are still waiting for it.
So after the teaser and after the credits, the next scene opens on Mulder and Scully in their office, and Mulder is showing Scully a tape of the alien autopsy, which we see in the teaser, which he paid $30 for. So it's kind of a little funny joke about how he paid, I think it was like $29.99 plus postage for the autopsy tape, which he saw an ad in the newspaper, and that's how he got it. Both Mulder and Scully debate about whether or not the tape is authentic. Obviously, Scully doesn't think the tape is authentic, as the usual skeptic. And Mulder sort of thinks, he's kind of undecided, but he's obviously swaying more to thinking the tape is authentic. So the banter between Mulder and Scully here is pretty snappy dialogue. I think it's pretty well written. And actually, as this episode goes, most of the dialogue between Mulder and Scully is pretty well written. I wondered, what did you think of sort of like the stuff that they say to each other?
It is very well written, you're right. There's no sag in the script between these two, like none at all. It's everything between them. It feels, at this point, with 2.5 seasons in, so the guys know how to write dialogue between the two characters very, very well. So you end up with, it feels like two guys, or two people, sorry, just being at work and chatting. You know, I don't have awkward conversations with people I've worked with for 2.5 years. You know, you just get on and have the conversations, doesn't matter how stupid it is, whether or not it be about, you know, alien autopsy videos. No, I think it's very well done, and it's something I like a lot in my TV. I like when people work together in a TV episode or in a TV show, I suppose. I like to feel like I'm watching people at work, because otherwise it just pulls you out of the show, and I think they've done very well with that particular thing in that episode.
And it also helps that David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson have great chemistry. So,
well, they do, absolutely.
Yeah, they seem very natural, don't they, when they're talking to each other, especially even if they're talking about something very strange.
Yeah.
You know, it seems kind of normal, doesn't it, really? Which is funny, because they are talking about aliens. But I particularly like how Scully references the Fox Network. At one point she says something like, this is a worse video than what was shown on the Fox Network.
Yeah.
Which is fun, because obviously the X-Files, it is on the Fox Network.
Yeah. And that's the dodgy alien autopsy video I was talking about, which did the rounds in like 95, 96. It was pretty hokey.
It was definitely a fake.
Oh yeah, there's no two ways about it. It was definitely a fake. But anybody that kind of looked at it thinking it was going to be real probably had watched far more confusing things than the X-Files in their time.
So, after looking at the video, Mulder and Scully head off to Allentown, Pennsylvania, where the guy who sold the video online, actually not online, in the newspaper, because this is before the heady days of the internet, is supposed to be living. And when they get there, they pull up to this house, which I thought was a very decent conspiracy theorist looking house. I was just like, yep.
The kind of house that looks like it'd have a weirdo living in the basement making alien autopsy videotapes. Yeah, I see that completely.
And it's basically filled with electronic equipment. And unfortunately, the guy who lives there, who sold the tape, is dead. And he's kind of been killed in a pretty... I thought it was a pretty horrific death, actually. I mean, there's lots of horrific deaths in the X-Files. But his hands have been tied behind his back and his head's been stuffed into a pillowcase.
Yeah.
And he's been shot in the back of the head. So it's like an execution.
That's properly executed, and there's no messing around like making it look like it was something else. They came in, strapped him up and executed him and left,
which is horrible.
It is
really horrible. So they basically, Scully feels him and he feels warm, so they know he didn't die that long ago. And just then they hear a noise and they see a man running from the property. Mulder chases after this guy and leaps over countless fences in pursuit. And this is kind of like the start. I mean, it's not really the start of Mulder as an action hero, because as we've seen in Ascension, he climbs the cable car, doesn't he? And he does all sorts of action like that. But this is definitely, in this two-parter, Mulder has a lot of action. In fact, he actually has more action than he has sort of almost dialogue, actually.
It's a very stunt-heavy episode for Mulder. Which is good. David Duchovny clearly wanted to do stuff like that, because I think he does most of it, you know, himself. Obviously, I don't think he would have actually jumped onto a train on his Todd, but you know, general, you know, jumping fences, like you say, being an action star. Absolutely, that was David Duchovny, and he does it very well.
So actually, the stunt at the end, which we'll get to, he does actually do that. Like he actually jumped onto the train.
Really?
Yeah. He wanted to do it. And it took about 6 weeks to set up to make sure it was actually sort of at least a little bit safe.
That's why it's hard to work with trains, because your crazy actors want to jump on top of them.
I was just thinking, like, if I was acting in the X-Files, I'm pretty sure I'd get a stunt double to do that for me. I have no desire to jump on a moving train.
I'd get a stunt double to run up the stairs for me if I could get away with it.
So what do you think of this, the action, like, now knowing that you've seen season 11?
Yeah.
Yeah, so now knowing that you've seen season 11, what do you think of the action, like, in this episode? Because you know that in season 11, in the new series, there's even more action. He's even more of an action hero. Do you think that fits Mulder? Or?
I think it fits him very well. I think the thing with season 11 is he's motivated in a different way, and you can kind of see that. But whereas at this point, we're still just chasing aliens. I know that sounds daft to be just chasing aliens, but you know, he's got a whole different motivation in the later seasons, which I think works well to upping the amount of stuff he's willing to do as a character, not necessarily as an actor. But here, I still think it's great here. I think he does a good job of convincing me that he wants to know what's going on. And obviously, at the end of the day, he's an FBI agent. It's his job to chase bad guys, whether or not it be over fences and shit. It's his job to chase bad guys, and you know, he does it pretty well.
I think in this episode, it sort of seems like this is something that he's trying out. He's trying out his physical prowess, whereas in season 11, I feel like he's actually learnt some martial arts, and he's had to learn it over years because he's got his ass kicked so many times.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's like, enough. He does learn something in this episode, though. So he catches up with the assassin, who's a Japanese a diplomat who actually manages to efficiently use some sort of martial arts, sort of like kung fu, to disarm him. And Mulder, and he disarms him basically by knocking his gun out of his hands. And Mulder, who is sick of having his gun taken away from him, who's sick of losing his gun, has a gun strapped to his ankle, and he makes a crack about being tired of losing his gun, which is funny because he does constantly lose his gun.
Well, yeah, it's 90s cop trope 101, really, isn't it? Every copper loses their gun in a chase or in a fight, and then the bad guy gets away because of it. So yeah, it's quite nice to have not just Mulder, but you know, the writers in the room acknowledge that.
Yeah, and I think they were sort of acknowledging it as well, because a lot of the fans had said at the time, like, Mulder's always losing his gun, and he's a pretty poor, FBI agent in terms of knowing how to use an armed weapon, because he's also pretty bad at aiming as well, isn't he? I mean, there's that kind of, apart from, I think, the episode Pusher, where he's shown in a firing range, he's never ever shown really practicing using his gun or anything.
No.
He goes by his wits.
Yeah.
He's more brains than brawn.
Exactly. But that's what we want him to be.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So one thing I noticed during this whole chase scene was the dramatic music. So during this whole sequence, there's lots of drums. It almost sounded a little bit like there was some sort of electronic cymbals. And it really heightens the sort of tension of the scene. And I wondered what you thought about the music in this entire episode. Like, do you think Jon Snow did a good... Jon Snow?
Yeah, I think...
Mark Snow, sorry.
Jon Snow? Jon Snow? I didn't even pick up on it, and I was about to say Jon Snow as well. No, Mark Snow, I think, actually does Mark a really Snow. Good job. But he does a good job for the most part. I don't think I've ever listened to an episode where I've gone, oh God, the music was a bit rubbish there. I enjoy listening to his scores when you watch an episode, but I'm kind of at the point where I go, oh yeah, great music, and move on.
Yeah, we're so used to it now, aren't we?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, we're so used to hearing him sort of in the background with his sort of strange sort of sound effects, like whether it's Tombs with that kind of dripping sort of gurgling drain sound, or whether it's, which is actually in the second part of this two-parter, or whether it's the kind of dramatic drums and the sort of clashing loud music, or sometimes it can be quite gentle actually and sinister. So it turns out the assassin is Japanese, and he says something to Mulder, and I don't know what he says because I don't know enough Japanese to know, but it doesn't sound very polite.
No.
Sounds like an insult. Later that evening, Mulder and Scully are at the Allentown police headquarters, and Skinner decides to drop by. And Skinner has quite an entrance. He sort of like swaggers through the corridor and takes a lengthy look at a passing prostitute, which I thought was kind of strange.
I didn't even notice that.
And one of the things that I read was that in lots of police stations in multiple episodes in the series, they almost always have a cop talking to a prostitute to show that they're in a police station, which I just thought was really weird. Just like prostitution is rife in all these small towns in America.
Surely a building filled with policemen is enough of an indicator that we're in a police station. Okay, I mean, if you feel the need to put a hooker in every episode, that's who am I to argue?
And they probably had to recruit all these like female extras to act as prostitutes, which I thought was quite amusing.
Now there's an advert in the paper you don't want to be answering.
Skinner then sweeps in and tells them that the suspect is actually a high-ranking Japanese official, and then sort of aggressively reprimands Mulder and Scully and tells them to return to Washington, and the assassin is going to be released, basically, because he's got diplomatic immunity. So where are we with Skinner's loyalties at this point in the series? Because I know that he's been supportive in previous episodes, but he sort of seems like he's back to having some sort of antagonistic relationship with them again.
Yeah, the diplomatic immunity thing, the X-Files done it, most TV shows have done it. It's one of those things that it's a way of making your character, doesn't matter how great they are, how on the side of the good guys they are, because there's nothing you can do about it, it's a really good device to just to very quickly and briefly as well make them possibly the bad guy again, or just not so much on the good guy's side. You know, you see this in everything from X-Files to Lethal Weapon. It's something that's used quite a lot. I think he's still on their side. he just at this point doesn't have a choice.
And they didn't really tell him what they were going to do, did they?
No.
So you can see
it probably doesn't help that he's a little bit pissed that they've just run off and to search for a dude who sold Mulder a dodgy video.
Yeah, and when he asks Mulder, what are you doing? Mulder's like, we're investigating a piracy thing.
Yeah.
And Skinner's expression is just like, oh, God.
We know really? All about Mulder. We know this ain't the first dodgy videotape he's bought by mail order.
Anyway, Mulder and Scully don't give up easily, so as we know. And good thing, otherwise there wouldn't be the rest of the episode. And they go through the suspect's briefcase and find satellite photos of what looks like a boat or some ships and a list of UFO club members. So these are people who belong to a UFO network that live locally. With one name, Betsy Hagopian, is circled. So I always feel a little bit of sentimental about Betsy Hagopian, because you do hear Betsy Hagopian's name repeatedly mentioned, and also I think in later episodes you might see her name written on files or on drawers and stuff in secret locations. And I feel quite sentimental about it, because as someone who is part Armenian, I know that Hagopian is an Armenian name.
Okay.
And
I did not know that.
It ends in IAN, and most Armenian surnames end in IAN. And so whenever you see an Armenian surname and you're Armenian, it's almost like, oh my God, that person's Armenian. I mean, that's the extent of like the fascination. Sort of ends there. But so when I first watched this episode, I was like, oh, they abducted Armenian women. But anyway, so Mulder takes the satellite photos to the lone gunman and finds out the Japanese have been spying on a ship called the Talipus, which was a salvaged ship looking for a wrecked Japanese submarine. And they ended up in a naval shipyard in Virginia. This is kind of one of those situations where it's a mythology episode, so you kind of have to have the lone gunman, but they make a very passing, have that sort of passing in the night, really, aren't they? It's just a very small scene, and then we don't really see them again.
No, I mean, it's the definition of cameo, really, isn't it, for an episode? It's they're there to just to move the plot forward a step, and we won't see them again. It's pretty much the same way, because MUFON is mentioned and then not really mentioned again. And that's how we get to Betsy Hagopian?
Hagopian.
Hagopian, there we go. I'm not Armenian, sorry.
Meanwhile, the Japanese diplomat that we saw earlier is murdered in a car by Stephen McHattie, who is known only as the Red-Haired Man, which is an odd name. I mean, like a lot of these individuals involved in the conspiracy or the assassins, they have these names like the well-manicured man, the cigarette-smoking man, and in this case he's called the red-haired man, but I don't think Stephen McHattie has red hair.
I'm pretty sure he doesn't, which makes it just, it just seems insulting, really, isn't it?
It's like there's a joke amongst his work colleagues, he's like conspiracy assassins, you know, league or something, and yeah, they all have different names for each other, and they named him the red-haired man for some reason to insult him or something.
Yeah.
And it sort of stuck, and that's how he's known. I think Stephen McHattie is great in this role. He is, without trying to insult the actor, he's kind of got a creepy looking face.
Oh, he has, and he's got bad guy written all over him. There's no two ways about that. He does, but he plays it very, very well.
Yeah, he's kind of impassive, but he's got these very sort of starey, kind of creepy eyes.
Yeah.
So you know that when you see him coming, that it's probably not going to be good news for you. So Scully goes to meet the MUFON women, the women who are all members of the same UFO network who we mentioned before. It turns out that Betsy Hagopian is actually in hospital being treated for cancer. But the women who she meets at Betsy Hagopian's house actually seem to recognise her and were introduced to Penny Northern. And Penny Northern is actually an important character, because later on, obviously, in season 4, she's the one that Scully really makes a connection with, because she and Penny were sort of in the same place when they were both abducted. And Penny also will eventually suffer from cancer. All the women who are abducted are just like Scully, in the sense they all have chips in the back of their necks. And what do you think of introducing Scully's abduction as part of the story? I mean, is this a good place to introduce this theme, or is it kind of just bloating the episode out a bit too much?
No, I think it works very well. I think it's one of those threads, and obviously we've all seen them with the X-Files. The X-Files leaves these threads of story that we never, or we don't get to see the end of, or it takes ages for them to come to conclusion. So to actually to further the story along a little bit by adding this in, I think what it actually does very well is reminds you that yes, she was abducted, and reminds you that stuff happened to her, and reminds you that Scully is in fact a really important part of this mythology, not just as the skeptic of the show. I actually really like it. I think it's a good point to bring it in. I don't think it bloats it at all, and I think it helps to wrap up ish the story of this double bill quite nicely.
I guess it gives Scully a very personal take, or not take, gives Scully a very personal stake in the actual story.
Yep.
I mean, Mulder already has a personal stake because he's got this wider search for the truth and for Samantha, but Scully, like we see in the first few scenes of the episode, isn't that interested in an alien autopsy. I mean, she doesn't believe it, she doesn't think it's true, so why would she continue to investigate this? And part of one of the reasons why, it's one of the things that comes up again and again in the series, is the effect that this search for the truth has on Scully's life, and whether she should continue and should she go live a normal life, that kind of thing. But yeah, she can't because of this abduction. She has to find out what happened to her and what the implications are on her health. So
exactly. And it changes, you know, even across these two episodes, it changes Mulder's objective as well, and it changes his motivations for doing what he's doing. It goes from alien autopsy, which he would still obviously by the end of the episode he'd still like to have an answer to, but also it means that it's directly connected to Scully being abducted, so he needs answers to that as well. And you know, it gets him more invested, it gets us more invested. I think it works very well as a device over this double bill.
Yeah, I agree. And also I think because it's such a suburban setting, all these sort of women, you know, sort of middle class women sitting there in what appears to be like just a normal living room, as if, and I think one of them walks by with a cup of tea, you know. It's all sort of, I would say, kind of almost kind of mundane and non-threatening.
Yeah.
And then they all hold up their chips, you know, that they've been taken out the back of their necks in these little sort of makeshift containers and kind of rattle them. There's something kind of horrifying about that this sort of mundane domestic setting, and all of them are holding up this sort of symbol of how they've been violated. I thought that was really effectively done.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who are keeping a weird thing that's not supposed to be in their bodies.
I know.
It's a weird collection to have, man.
They're all holding up like a little badge of honour, really, aren't they?
Yeah.
And because of the fact that the women recognise Scully implies that they were all taken to the same place, and they may have been at the same place at the same time when they're being experimented on. In the meantime, Mulder goes to speak to the Coast Guard, who has a beard. And one of the trivia items about this episode is that apparently, this is kind of inaccurate, because apparently Coast Guards were not allowed to have beards after 1980. And that single fact is, I mean, why?
Okay.
What's wrong with a beard?
I don't know, I'd take that.
I know. And I was thinking, for all the men out there with beards, I feel offended for you. I was like, why? What reason? I don't know why a Coast Guard wouldn't be allowed a beard. But anyway, I'm sure it's all changed now. I'm sure the Coast Guards in America are quite hipster now, and they all have big, bushy beards. So he goes to speak to the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard is pretty useless in helping him. And Mulder sort of asks him to go away and find some paperwork. And then he leaves and breaks into a ship at the dock, which I think is the ship that was actually... It's not kind of clear. I think at one point he finds the name of the ship, Talipus, actually on a coat that's hanging up in the ship. But I was kind of a bit confused there. I was like, how does he know which ship to break into? But anyway, he's found the ship, and he's breaking into it, and he starts searching through it. And then a group of highly trained men in black, which like a SWAT team, pull up in cars and start to search the ship, presumably looking for him. And Mulder avoids detection by jumping overboard into the water. I didn't feel this was very realistic.
No, it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. And I watched it the other day, and when I watched him jump into it, I was like, how did no one hear that or see it? Or just absolute rubbish.
Yeah, and we're talking about highly trained men in combat gear. You know, And the fact that he just kind of hides behind a pair of... hides behind like a door at one point or something. And they don't see him. Meanwhile, Scully is still talking to the MUFON ladies. And she discovers that Betsy Hagopian is dying of an unexplained and untreatable cancer. And this sort of foreshadows what will happen to Scully in season four. So, and obviously when you first watch this... I'm not sure. I mean, what was your first reaction when you first saw this episode?
I genuinely couldn't tell you. It was so long ago.
Years ago.
Yeah, I'm not. So you got to remember, in 96, I was 14 years old. I don't think it would have really registered with me that, oh shit, we've basically been told that in the next year or so, Scully's going to die. Watching it back, and obviously like when I would have understood what I was watching, I think I would have been a bit shocked, and I would have more gone, well, how are they going to resolve this? Because now at this point, I know that there are more seasons with, you know, Scully, and it's the equivalent nowadays of watching a TV show and two episodes in being told that it's been picked up for two more seasons, and you go, well, I know everything's going to be okay. So, you know, I've lost all sense of drama from anything that happens.
Yeah, and I think that actually this is one of the reasons why I don't enjoy 731 and actually this particular Nisai as well, this particular episode as well, because of the fact that I know all the conspiracy and mythology stuff that's going to come afterwards. And so, I mean, I do enjoy these two episodes a lot, but I have to say I think I probably would have found them more... they would have had more of an impact on me when I first watched them, and I didn't have any foreknowledge of what was going to happen. And actually, I don't think when I first watched this, it did occur to me that Scully was going to get cancer. I thought this was a sad thing to happen to the MUFON ladies.
Yeah.
But watching it now, I feel like, oh, I feel much, much more sad, actually. It's sort of like I feel a little bit now when I watch some of the early episodes of Scully finding the chip in her neck, and, you know, and Dwayne Barry, when she sort of, I think it's Dwayne Barry, where she runs it through the cash register at a supermarket, and I think, oh, Scully, you don't know what kind of... you don't know all the... Actually, it's Dwayne Barry's chip, isn't it? It's not her chip, but, you know, you don't know what you're getting yourself into, you know? This is going to change your life completely. Now, watching this, I feel sad for her. Like, she's starting to realise that she could also be suffering from cancer, or at some point in the future have health problems because of this.
Yeah. I think if there was, you know, someone... old enough to understand what they were watching, but maybe had somehow not realized that after this season there are eight more seasons to come, you could imagine them watching this point of this episode and going, oh god, what's going to happen? Is she going to be okay? Is there going to be more? And, you know, but like you say, because we know what comes along, there's not much drama in it. It's nice to see the beginning of that part of her story arc, because it's pretty much where the cancer thing starts, isn't it, for her? But no, I don't remember far enough back to remember if I was worried for her or not.
It's funny because a lot of X-Files fans, especially a lot of people on the X-Cast as well, started watching the X-Files as teenagers or as children. And so our perception of the X-Files when we first watched it is obviously going to be radically different than what it is now when watching as adults. And I noticed that I pick up on a lot of things now, or different things appeal to me more now as an adult than they did when I was a teenager.
Oh, absolutely. When I was a kid, I watched it because it was a cool show about aliens. Now, it's a really cool show about aliens with political intrigue and horror stuff and monsters. And this is a great TV show. But, you know, there's literally been 25 years since the show started. I was 10 25 years ago.
So it's like a completely different experience now.
It is.
So Mulder has emerged from hiding at the dock, and it seems like he's been hiding in the water for a long time. I hope not, because it's now night time, so hours have gone by and the sun's gone down. He's pretty wet, but I don't know, I think hiding in the water,
this is clearly, it's super Mulder, because he hasn't come out of hypothermia or anything.
I was just going to say, exposure. So he climbs to the dock and he starts investigating, and there's a lot of action and there's a lot of people doing things at the dock, and he climbs to the side of a warehouse and sees what I think is an alien spacecraft inside the warehouse being tested and investigated, or being fumigated really, by scientists. Was I right in that? Is that an alien spacecraft?
I think it is. I honestly do not know.
It looked a little bit like a giant weather balloon, which maybe they did that deliberately because obviously people have confused weather balloons with UFOs in the past, haven't they? So maybe they're doing it deliberately. But he glimpses it, and obviously there's a brilliant shot of his face sort of framed in this sort of steamed up window of the warehouse, looking on with awe at this sight. So we assume that the alien spacecraft has somehow been pulled in by the ship that he was investigating in the dock. So he returns to his apartment looking rather wet and depressed, which has been ransacked, although I actually thought initially it hadn't been ransacked. His apartment's been broken into and somebody's been looking for something, but I just initially thought he was really messy.
Just a filthy pig, just doesn't know how to tidy up.
I mean, there's a few papers here and there, and I just thought maybe he just, you know, didn't clean up after himself when he rushed out that morning to watch the autopsy video. But some of the drawers have been opened, and obviously somebody's broken into his apartment while he's been out and has looked for something while he was away. And Skinner is sitting in Maud's apartment in the dock, which I think is probably not very helpful.
No.
Because Mulder is a little bit jumpy because his apartment's been broken into and he's got his gun out.
Yes. Skinner's lucky he doesn't get shot.
Yeah. And it seems like he's kind of disappointed in Mulder. Like, you know, he seems sort of quite negative in the scene. And it just makes me laugh because I'm like, you're approaching your employee in the dark in his apartment. This is not the way to talk to somebody.
Well, no, I mean, you wouldn't want to come home to find your boss just sat in your living room with the lights off, would you?
Yeah. And he hasn't called the police, hasn't said, like, you know, my colleague's home has been broken into or anything. Skinner tells him that the Japanese diplomat who we saw earlier, who Mulder arrested, is now dead. And we know that because we saw him get into a car with the red-haired man, the assassin. And the Japanese want the briefcase back that Scully has, that has all the satellite photos in and the information about the MUFON group. Skinner acts pretty annoyed and then lets Mulder know he's not going to help him. So what did you... I mean, why is Mulder not going to help? Why is Skinner not going to help Mulder? Is it just because he's diplomatically got his hands tied, or he's just...
I think it's probably... I like to think it's that. I do like to think of Skinner as the majority of the time the good guy that wants to help. So I do think this is a... you know, an international incident kind of problem. They don't want to end up at war with Japan because of something their ridiculous FBI agent went and done.
Yeah, he's kind of been told probably to stay out of it, really, hasn't he?
Yeah. But, you know, Skinner does still kind of bow to the whims of the people above him a lot of the time, and if they've told him to stay away, he's probably just like... There doesn't seem to be a reason to defend Mulder. He's chasing a alien autopsy video. Why put the effort in?
I do think he's a little bit unnecessarily mean to Mulder, though, in this episode.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes the writers do that. I think they sometimes, to try and create tension between Skinner and Scully and Mulder, they make Mulder, Skinner act a little bit harsh, or Mulder act a little bit knee-jerk. And they sort of, like, antagonise each other. And I find that a bit jarring because so much of the time Skinner is supportive or doing something behind the scenes to help them, even if it's not overt.
Yeah.
That when, you know, five episodes later they turn around and say, can we trust him? I'm like, again? You know, it does seem a little... But yeah, they're trying to create drama, I suppose.
They are. And I think this is something, especially as the later years go on, it's something that, you know, you're seven seasons in and 22 episodes a season, it's tough to find original ways to create drama. You know, I think it's... Obviously, it's, in season three, it probably doesn't need to be used quite as harshly as it was, but I do see why it's done.
Not getting what he needs from Skinner, Mulder goes to meet Senator Matheson, who I think we last saw in Little Green Men. I think we've heard about him since then. I think that Mulder's tried to contact him and not been able to get in contact with him. And he tends to go to speak to Senator Matheson when he's desperate, really, when he's got no other form of information or no other form of, like, route into finding what he needs to know.
Yeah.
What do you think of the character of Senator Matheson?
He's a slimy bastard. I really like him. I think he's a great character, but he's slimy, and yeah, he's one of those. There's something not quite right. There's something definitely going on, but as a character, I think he's great.
He's kind of using Mulder. I'm not sure how he's using Mulder, but I always get the feeling that he's using him, and he actually doesn't really care as much about discovering the truth. I feel Senator Matheson cares very much about his own career.
Yeah.
So he feeds Mulder just enough, but at the same time, doesn't really actually help him that much at all.
No. There's got to be something in it for him as well, somewhere along the line.
The other day I saw on Twitter somebody sort of asking where they thought Senator Matheson would be in 2018. Politically, what he'd be doing. And I thought that was an interesting idea. Like, where is he and what's he doing? And
he's recently been fired by the current president for doing something, standing next to him in the wrong direction. I don't know.
So Mulder's in Senator Matheson's office, and Matheson gives some details on the autopsy and links it to a conspiracy to create alien-human hybrids. And there's a great line where Matheson says, "Monsters begetting monsters." So the scientists, the Japanese scientists that have... It seems now they're not just doing autopsies, they're also experimenting, doing medical experiments on people.
Yeah.
And so this idea of monsters begetting monsters is actually something that I think is a recurrent theme in the X-Files, of scientists abusing their power and actually doing experiments that are both illegal and immoral. It's almost like a distrust of science, actually.
I think that's quite likely to be what they're going for. Again, it's something we still see nowadays, but I think it's definitely going for the we don't absolutely trust scientists to be scientists. We don't absolutely trust the government to tell us the truth. We don't absolutely trust that scientists are telling the government stuff and it's getting to us properly. And yeah, monsters begin. It's the Mengele thing, isn't it? It's the just because they can doesn't mean they should, but they probably are. Yeah, it's an interesting concept to bring up, and it's something the X-Files, it doesn't shy away from at all. In any of its 11 seasons.
Well, this actual storyline was inspired by real... I mean, we'll get onto that because it actually takes place in the second part of this storyline.
Yeah.
But this storyline was inspired by actual real scientists experimenting on human beings during World War II. So this is a very real horror story. I mean, it's not something the X-Files is plucking out of thin air.
No, it's not.
It's something that human beings have actually done. And in recent history. So I think that makes the whole thing even more sinister. Mulder does some research after leaving Senator Matheson's office. He does some research in his glasses, which is always great to see. I always love seeing Mulder in glasses. So Scully comes in and to the office and tells Mulder all about MUFON. She's obviously freaked out about it, and she seems kind of concerned. You know, she doesn't know if she's okay. And Mulder meanwhile, Mulder's been investigating. And Mulder does show some concern, but then kind of just sweeps it away, really.
Yeah.
And tells her that he's been investigating the Japanese scientists who have been doing the autopsy and have been involved in this project. And he discovers they were members of Unit 731 during World War II. And 731, which I was just saying, was a covert Japanese research department that did biological and chemical experiments on humans during World War II. And it sort of sounds like that this came to the light of the American public around the time that this episode was being written. So Chris Carter sort of mentioned that he'd read an article about it in the New York Times, and he thought this would be a great part to put in the X-Files. But so I assume people must have known about it during World War II, although if it was covert, maybe not that many.
Well, yeah, but I don't know the details, obviously, but if it would have come out, early mid-90s, so it would have been perfect fodder for Chris Carter to put into one of his episodes. Same as the alien autopsy tape beginning of the episode. It's just one of those things it's common knowledge. It's in the public domain. People are reading about it on the news. Let's make an episode about it. I mean, TV's been doing that forever and still does it now, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, I guess it's how the general public maybe digests their own history. It's very American, actually. The Americans, when something tragic or dramatic or a big historical event happens, they often do make a film about it or a TV show sort of surrounding the idea. It's sort of the way in which they kind of digest and analyze and sort of experience their own history or their own culture. I'm just thinking, you know, they made the film United 93.
Yeah.
They made, you know, a film about the Twin Towers. And most recently there was a film made about the Boston Marathon bombing. So I sort of feel a little bit like it's a way in which maybe the public collectively can kind of cope with these events and understand them. So though all the stuff is reported in the news, putting it into a TV drama is also a way of kind of digesting it. And maybe that's one of the ways which, that's maybe one of the reasons why Chris Carter wanted to put it, I mean, he probably put it in the X-Files because it was entertaining, but also...
It does, you know, it's the kind of thing that fits into the X-Files mythos as well, in, you know, as a whole. It's a very X-Files-y kind of story.
The photos that Mulder shows Scully of the actual experiments, those look like real photos. I mean, I'm not entirely sure because I haven't researched Unit 731, but they look like real photos. And Mulder mentioned some of the horrific experiments that these scientists did on innocent people, and it just is really awful. So it kind of adds this much more upsetting, creepy dynamic to the episode. Especially when you think that Scully may have been abducted by some of these individuals, because she seems to recognise one of the Japanese men in the photos. And Mulder tells her the autopsy was conducted on a train carriage on the government's secret railroad. I don't know, I found the idea of a secret government railroad kind of hokey.
Well, it's pretty hard to hide train tracks and trains. It is kind of hokey. It's daft. It's beyond daft, but it's, yeah.
But then... That's the X-Files, isn't
it? Is. You know, we've been watching this for long enough now, you just go, that's just the X-Files. It's just what the X-Files does.
Mulder just kind of like puts on his coat and walks out, typical Mulder style. She's like, what are you doing? And he's like, see you later, I'm going to go look for this train. I don't think he even tells her he's going to go look for this train. I think he just puts his coat on and walks out. Scully takes the chip from her neck to be analysed to the FBI, and she takes it to Agent Pendrell. So this is Agent Pendrell's first appearance. Poor, lovely little Agent Pendrell, who is actually a redhead. He's a real redhead. Andrew, how do you feel about Pendrell?
Bless him. Just bless him. Oh, he's so awkward. And I cringe every time. Every time that I watch that first conversation, it makes me want to cry. It's just...
He's so eager.
But it's so awkward and so painful to watch.
Oh, he's such a sweetheart. And it's even more tragic knowing what happens to him.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm watching him now, I was like, oh, Pendrell, just don't get involved.
Yeah, stay away.
Don't get mixed up with Mulder and Scully. Now we cut to Mulder and his action hero moves again. This time he's running along the top of a roof of a train depot, which I thought was entirely unnecessary. So he looks through some binoculars and sees Japanese scientists place what seems to be an alive alien. So it looks like an alien in sort of like a biohazard suit being put on board a train carriage. And this is the same train carriage that we saw earlier with the long number on the top of it. And this kind of basically sort of ends there, really. And Scully's reviewing the video footage from Mulder's autopsy tape, and she has a flashback to her abduction where she was experimented on by one of the Japanese scientists who she recognises from the footage. And I thought this was a really good scene. I thought Gillian Anderson's acting was really good, like this sort of bewilderment and then this kind of horror dawning on her face.
Yeah.
As she realises that this is the same, one of the same guys that experimented on her. She's starting to remember her abduction.
But that makes it then the perfect... Because it's quite a long setup for the cliffhanger at the end of this episode. So... But it's perfect with her realising what's going on, her realising it's probably the same place or a similar place that she was taken at the same time as Mulder's jumping off of bridges and onto trains. You know, it's a long setup for a good cliffhanger that, you know, if we were still watching this week by week, whether or not you buy secret railroads and alien abductions, you're desperate now for next Thursday to come along so you can watch the next episode.
Yeah, I mean, it ends on a really dramatic, good point. I mean, it sort of does end with her sort of starting to remember things, and you do really want to know what happened to her.
Yeah.
Because this abduction storyline has been going on for seasons now, so, and it's something that they really put a lot of effort into early on you know, and it's paying off now with the sort of emotional payoff. The audience cares about Scully, they care about the fact that she's abducted, and they want to know what happened. So the Japanese scientist that actually is in the footage is shown at the train station in Ohio, where his bodyguard is killed in the men's toilets by the red-haired man. The red-haired man seems to do most of his assassination work in toilets, which he does later on as well.
Well, everyone's got to have a niche, shouldn't they?
I guess it's a good place to kill someone.
Yeah.
You know. It's kind
leave
of
him in
the
there,
way.
Lock the door. People just think, you know, bad night last night. Leave
I wonder
be.
If anyone's ever done a study of how many people die in toilets in films and television shows. Because I think a lot of people die in toilets, don't they? It's one of the main places you see people die.
Sounds like a bizarre rabbit hole to go down.
Maybe we should do that. So he boards the train from Ohio to Vancouver. And this doesn't seem like a secret railroad to me. But I guess maybe the Japanese scientist is taking a public train, because there seems to be a lot of passengers on the train. A lot of like actual just normal civilians. Poor unsuspecting civilians. Mulder tries to get on the train, but by the time he gets to the station in Ohio, it's already left. Mulder, I mean, I'm not quite sure what Mulder was doing from the time between where he was on the top of the roof of the train depot to getting to the train station in Ohio. I guess just driving frantically trying to get to Ohio. I mean, Mulder's movements are a bit strange in this episode. He does a lot of running around, but not actually that much work. No. So he drives to catch the train up. So actually he's driving in the direction of the train, but speeding so he gets there before gets to a junction before the train does. And he manages to get ahead of it, and he's on a bridge, and he's waiting for the train to come. And meanwhile, Scully's going into her apartment, and she gets accosted by Mr. X, who suddenly appears out of the corner, a little bit like Skinner in Mulder's apartment. These people who feel the need to talk to Mulder or Scully and approach them in the most inconvenient and threatening way possible.
These people don't have shorter lifespans, I do not know.
How Scully doesn't immediately pull her gun on Mr. X, you know, why she doesn't immediately take a gun out and be like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Why are you standing outside my apartment? I mean, the fact that everybody seems to know where Mulder and Scully live.
Yeah, it might be time to move.
Yeah. And Scully's had so many home invasions.
Yeah.
So she lets Mr. X into her apartment, which I would never do. And then they have a conversation where Mr. X basically says, don't let Mulder get on the train. And because the scientists are aware of who he is and what he's doing, and it's going to be dangerous, and just don't do it. Scully, I think out of more concern for Mulder's safety, kind of believes him and calls Mulder up and basically tells him, don't get on the train. And Mulder ignores Scully and she says, don't do it. And he's like, it's too late, man. I've already done it. It's a bit like in War of the Copperhashes when she's like, don't enter this government property. And he's like, it's too late. I'm already in.
Yeah, I'm in here already.
Already doing it. So, it's, you know, don't do the thing, Mulder. Don't do the thing. And he's like, it's too late. I've already done the thing. So, very typical of him. What do you think of this cliffhanger, though? This is a pretty amazing cliffhanger.
I really like it. I think if I had been watching it week by week, I don't remember if I was when it first came out, I think I would have been desperate for the next episode to come along. Which is, you know, it's the sole point of a cliffhanger, leave me on the edge of my seat waiting for more. And yeah, I would absolutely would have been. By this point, I was very invested in the story, I think.
And what did you think of David Duchovny's stunt? Because it actually is him jumping on top of a moving train.
It's impressive. I mean, I would have thought it was. I thought it was impressive when I thought it was a stuntman. Jumping on top of a moving train cannot be easy. You know, we're not talking, you know, Tom Cruise levels of wanting to do your own stunts and hanging off of planes and helicopters and things. It's, yeah, but I didn't realise it was David Duchovny, and now that I do, I'm suitably impressed, I think.
I think when I first saw this, I was very excited, because in my mind at the time, Mulder wasn't really an action hero, and to see him jump onto a moving train seemed both very much in character, because he's kind of impulsive and that's the kind of thing he would do, but also kind of out of character as well, because except for like Ascension and a few other episodes, you haven't really seen him hang off buildings or hang off dangerous moving vehicles.
No.
So for me, it was incredibly exciting to see him. And then when he drops his phone, well, he doesn't. I suppose the impact of landing on the train knocks the phone out of his hand.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, it's your only line to Scully. so I thought it was really exciting when I first saw it. And now knowing that actually it is David Duchovny doing the stunt, which I didn't know before, I was really impressed actually watching it, rewatching it this time round.
No, I thought it was very well done. I thought he, you know, like I said, until today I had no idea it was him, but knowing it is him, I'm very impressed. And the phone thing, that was going to happen. That happens now. It wouldn't happen now. Now you just smash the screen of whatever phone you were carrying.
So, like, looking back, would you change your rating, or are you still a 9 out of 10?
No, it's still easily a 9 out of 10 for me. It is a favourite of mine, a real favourite. You know, it's one of those ones that's easily kind of dismissed. A lot of people I know, yeah, I think I could safely say this about most people that listen to the X-Cast as well. When you go, oh, what are your favourite mythology episodes? This one will never, ever come up. Never. But I absolutely adore it.
I also do really like the introduction of a different culture. So I like the introduction of the Japanese as well. The idea, I mean, I suppose they do that with the Red and the Black, don't they? With the introduction of the Russians. Is it the Red and the Black? Yeah. I like the idea that the conspiracy is a very global one as well, rather than just American-centred.
Yeah.
So the introduction of the Japanese is, I think, quite effective. And also the introduction of real life, immoral, and I would say probably very evil scientists is also something that's really effective. If you haven't rewatched this episode in a while, we hope that we've piqued your interest and that you'll go back and rewatch it and let us know what you think. It's been fun dissecting it today. And you'll have to tune in next time for a deep analysis of the sequel, 731, to find out what happens to Mulder and why, you know, what's in the actual train carriage and if he manages to stay on top of the train. So, but until then, trust no one.
The X-Cast and X-Files podcast is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at The X-Cast, and on Facebook if you type in The X-Cast, or at our group, X-Files Basement, an X-Cast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support The X-Cast further, you can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/The X-Cast. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/thexcast to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at I am Will A-Y-E.